Welcome to Willamette Wake Up. I'm Melanie Zermer. We've talked about what it's like for people who don't have stable shelter in the Salem area for many years on this show. Recently, we've spotlighted homelessness through the eyes of the Mid-Willamette Valley Community Action Agency, who works with individuals who are homeless, or we've talked about policies that affect these people's lives. During our last conversation, Ashley Hamilton, the deputy director of the local Community Action Agency, mentioned that generational homelessness was an issue. So I wanted to explore that and what is available for families who don't have a home. What are their unique challenges and opportunities? What needs should be considered when shaping a service plan for them? And what is currently in place to move families from their cars to temporary shelter and eventually to long-term housing? The only thing I was able to glean about homeless families in terms of the numbers is to find out how many students in the Salem-Keizer district are recorded as homeless. And that number, according to reports from the district and the media in the spring of 2024, was over 1,200. Over 1,200 students in the Salem-Keizer school district had no stable housing. So with me today to talk about homelessness and families and to share what they know about what homelessness looks like for families are Sarah Webb, the Chief Program Officer for the Community Action Agency, and Lynette Snell, the Program Manager of Family First, a day center for families in downtown Salem. So thank you both for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Community Action Agency supports families in a number of ways. Can you walk us through what that looks like today? And the types of programs in place to support families experiencing homelessness. And Sarah, why don't we talk with you?
Yeah, that sounds great. So we actually have sort of a wide breadth of services for families, starting with Family First, which is our family day center. And Lynette can talk a little more about that. We go from street outreach, like identifying these families. We go into the school districts, into McKinney-Vento's programs, bring them in. They go to Family First often and get their basic needs met there. From there, we can place them through direct referral to Arches Nest, which is our overnight emergency shelter for families with children underneath the age of 18. And then we also have family-specific housing dollars where we can take people directly from street into day center, into shelter, and then directly into housing. So we have a really nice continuum there.
So what does day-to-day support look like for a family in your programs from the moment they enter crisis to when they begin to regain stability? And maybe we can talk about more about Family First, Lynette, which I understand you're the program director of.
Sure. Yes, as the program manager for Arches Family First, we definitely want to meet our potential clients right as soon as they come in under crisis. And the way that we're able to do this is providing a safe space for them in that moment of crisis. And this is, we go to the extent of providing the necessary resources like food, clothing, transportation, and staff walking alongside them during this first initial crisis piece. Mm-hmm.
And so you might meet them at the Family First Center, which is an actual brick and mortar building?
Yes, we do offer walk-ins just to come in and walk in. And there's also QR codes that are distributed through the community at other resource centers so that they can scan the QR code and conduct a self-assessment.
Mm-hmm. So that's how I was going to ask you how you reach out to people. And it sounds like you've got literature out there, maybe word of mouth through other Arches programs.
Yes, and through our outreach teams.
Okay. All right. So then you sit down and you assess a family. You find out what their particular needs are, and then kind of what comes next.
So we look at what their needs are, and then this will help the staff start to build a relationship with our clients and their children. And based off that comes trust from the families, and then working with them to design individualized plans for them, whatever those resources may be. And again, that can be healthcare, it can be transportation, food, providing meals for them when they come into our center. There's a play center for children so they can take off their shoes and be a child for a bit and feel like there's this home environment. And again, trust and is really a big piece of that, with the staff walking alongside of them and feeling a little place of home.
Yeah, you talked about the Family First Center, a little piece of home, and I was able to visit. I met you, first time I met you was there, and we got a tour of the facility. So for our listeners, maybe you could just explain a little bit about what it looks like a family's walking in for the first time. What kinds of things would they see and feel and hear?
Sure. So first-time family walking in, they would be greeted by our site assistants, getting them into a comfortable space. We want to make sure that they've obviously are hydrated, that they've been fed. If not, we do home-cooked meals, so we can provide them a meal. And I like to do that initially because it gets them comfortable. They're at a table setting, they're able to relax a little bit and have a meal and kind of get used to what they're seeing around them in the center, which are the cubicles of the case managers and the staff walking around, looking at where the toys are located, seeing where there's seating areas for people to just enjoy one another's company, be able to decompress if they need to, so that they become familiar with the center.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then, so they've had a meal, the children maybe are playing or calmed down a little bit. Then what comes next?
Then what comes next is we will pair them up with a case manager, and the case manager will sit with the parents and whatever that may look like. So that could be a single family home, that could be a grandparent taking care of grandchildren, whatever that family unit looks like. But we want to make sure that that's done while the children are able to play, and mm-hmm. so we have an intake area that's right next to the play center, keeps the children comfortable and playing with the items that we have for them, and allows the parents to have more of the serious conversations with the case managers.
Mm-hmm. And then in addition to that, that's where you're doing some planning and they're figuring out where they can go next and where they can get services. And I'm assuming that you help bridge that gap between knowing what the service is and how to connect them with the service.
Absolutely.
Like you might make the phone call or whatever.
Yes. And so we will, the case managers and other staff members will obviously take that initiative and make sure phone calls are met, walking alongside, guiding through phone calls, even working with them on, we have a client center that's for, that will provide them services to and access to the internet. And so if that's what that means, again, we want to walk alongside them. And so we want to make sure that we're sitting with them, going through those steps mm-hmm. and providing those resources, for them.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then this is a day center, so they're not going to spend the night there. What are the hours?
We are open 7 days a week, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Okay. And people can either walk in or...
Yes.
Okay. Well, good. And do you also have, I don't know, like it seemed like I saw, was it laundry facilities, showers? Do you have either of those?
We don't have laundry facilities, but we do have showers.
Okay.
So we do offer that every day of the week. Mm-hmm. And then also, again, with the other resources like transportation, we have bus passes that are available for our clients and potential clients. We want to make sure and help with that, with transportation as much as possible. And so we also provide transportation with our vehicle. And so as long as that's scheduled, and we do some emergency transport as well, and so that's accessible to the families.
Yeah, and I'm guessing that some of the parents are working, right? It's not like they're unemployed always.
Correct.
Yeah, so sometimes they also need to get to their place of work.
Sure. So I have a family right now where dad is working, and so dad goes to work, mom brings the kids in to the day center in the morning, they have breakfast, they get ready for school, they shower, they change there, and mom with the smaller children that are not in school yet will be at the day center, and the two younger ones will be participating in different activities that we have through the center for the children, and mom is interacting with case managers and kind of getting that support system until dad gets out of work.
Okay. And I'm just sitting here, Lynette, wondering if Family First didn't exist, where would these people be during the day?
Yeah.
Okay. Where would they You're be wondering the same thing.
Yeah. Where would they be during
well,
the day?
You know, I started the conversation by talking about people probably living in their cars, and I don't even really know if that's true. That's an image I have. Is that a common occurrence where families who don't have shelter are living out of their cars, or are there other situations?
I would say the bulk of it is living out of cars, but there mm-hmm. are other situations, unfortunately.
Mm. Okay. Well, and family homelessness, I think it's less visible than other forms of homelessness? And from where you sit, either one of you, can you help us visualize what it looks like for families? And what do people most often not see about the scale and reality of this issue?
You know, families are less visible, you're right. And I think the reason for that is the consequences of an unstable living environment for a family with children under 18 are much higher than with just adults. And a lot of families are nervous to be homeless. They're afraid their kids are going to be taken away. So they hide, right? They hide better, which is a double-edged sword, because that also means we can't get to them as easily. Our outreach can't find them as easily. It's easier to see them double up in apartments, stay on a friend's couch. Often the kids will stay with a friend over the weekend, that sort of thing, because it's so hard on the kids to be on the street and it's so risky. If you think about the people on the street who are the most vulnerable, right, we're talking about kids. And so it can be scary. And whether you're living in a tent or you're living in a car, it's terrifying to be a parent and not have stable housing for your kids.
Yeah, you must spend a lot of time every day figuring out who's going to be where.
Yes.
At any given time.
Yes.
Well, I've heard that serving families is really one of the most complex areas of this work. And Lynette, I think you kind of talked about that, talking about the unique needs. So you're working with both parents, sometimes both parents, sometimes a single mom, and the children whose needs may be very different. So can you tell us more about that, Lynette?
Yeah, so serving a family unit, there's obviously several needs. And again, it depends on what that unit looks like. Grandparents taking care of children, single family, single mom or dad, whoever has guardianship of the child. So it obviously may look different. Again, the adults their focus could be transportation. Obviously shelter, that's a given, right? But transportation, job resources, food, medical. But children are a little bit different. And I'll tell you an example. I had a 7-year-old in our resource center. And the 7-year-old was having a conversation with mom. And mom was going through some clothes, looking for clothing. And the child said to the mother, can you find me something nice, mom? Mm. Because when I'm at school, I get made fun of.
Oh, my.
About my clothes and my shoes. So could we get something nice today, mom? Mm. And that just really touched my heart, because there's a need for a child, a clothing need, and a conversation between the child and his mother. And so obviously that need is different.
Yeah.
And very heartfelt.
Yeah. Yeah. She was looking at the basics, and he was trying to step up his game a little bit so he could fit in better with his peers, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's a great example. Can you think of anything else like that, either one of you, in terms of the challenges of working with families with complex needs?
Yeah. So if you think about even in your own life, right, how different your household composition is, and you think about what a mom needs versus a dad's needs, or a grandfather or an uncle or an older sister. We often see elder siblings taking custody of younger siblings, especially if they've been in the foster care system and one has aged out and the other one will go with them. But even if you look at a traditional parental unit sort of with kids, mom's needs are often very different from dad's needs or grandpa's needs or grandma's needs, right? And then you add the kids in and you're looking at what sort of transpires is everybody's needs sort of roll downhill to the kids, right? We're talking about generational trauma. We're talking about generational homelessness sometimes. And often the situation that led them to the street, right? And adults, for the most part, have better coping strategies than kids. Not always. But kids are resilient in a very different way than adults are, mm-hmm. right? The life mm-hmm. hasn't quite beat the excitement out of them in the same way that a homeless adult has experienced, right? So you have to go in with this idea that you're going to create an environment where each individual family member gets their own needs met. Mm. Maybe one child really, it's very important to them to go to school and have clothes that make them fit in. Maybe the other child doesn't really care about that, but they're not reading as well as their classmates. And so they really need help with curriculum and with tutoring. And then mom's just trying to keep everybody safe, and dad's just trying to keep everybody fed. And so you have four people who have very competing needs, maybe not competing, but different priorities. And it's our job to sit down as an agency, not just Lynette's team, but whoever's working with this family and say, okay, we're going to look at you as a unit, as a family unit. So as a family unit, what do we need? We need to get you off the street. We need to get you resources. We need to get you housed, get you safe. As a unit, that's what you need. But then what does every individual person within this family need, right? Do we need to get resources for one kid that's different than resources for another kid? And then how do we get mom to a place where she feels like she can support everybody and get her the help she needs while dad's out working, but they may have a little at home that, you know. So it's multifaceted. It's very complex to bring them all together because we then have to split them apart on paper and decide who needs what, right? And everything we do is client-centered. Everything we do, people think, well, they're going to come in, whether it's family first or it's the nest. I think the image within the community is they're going to come in and we're going to do these 10 things. We're going to get you food. We're going to get you clothed. We're going to get you housed. We're going to get you case management. You're going to get medical, and then we'll get you a job, and then it's all going to be fine. And the truth is, it's not linear. It goes all over the place. It bounces everywhere. And at the end of the day, the client gets to decide what their goals are. We're not telling them, first you're going to get housed, then you're going to do this, then you're going to do that. The client's deciding, okay, I don't want to work on housing right now because of this. Or I want to work on housing, but I don't want to get mental health help yet because I'm not ready to dig into that. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine digging into trauma before you're stably housed, right? Mm-hmm. And so everything we do is client-centered and client-driven. And so we're not giving them some prescribed 10-step plan. They're deciding what their goals are and what their next steps are. So that makes it additionally complicated, you know, because we have to go by what the family wants.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think you've answered my question, Sarah, but I was going to ask how your team like actually supports multiple people within a family at the same time while recognizing that each person has their needs. And I think you answered that. And in the past, families were often required to separate in order to access shelter or support. And it sounds like that's really changed. Tell me more about that.
It certainly has changed in our facilities. So other homeless, or I'll say other family shelters within our community or outside of our community, often what happens is they have a very restrictive guideline for who they'll let in, right? They'll almost always let mom and a kid in, mom and a little kid, maybe mom and a medium old kid. But they often won't let mom and dad come together because it's often just females, adults. And a lot of times what happens is with the male children, once they hit about the age of 14, they're not allowed to stay there anymore because they're considered, I guess, a threat. I don't really understand why. But I don't know anywhere other than us that will allow single dads. Mm. So when we built the nest, we really just like all of our shelters, we really looked at where the gaps were. What are the things that are keeping families on the street, and how do we solve those problems, right? And we've talked about this in other podcasts. When we started the NAV, or we started the Inn or the Lodge, we did the same thing. We looked at where the gaps were and how we bring the most vulnerable in off the street. And it was the same thing with the family shelter. What were the things that were keeping families homeless? It was not allowing males in the facility, both teenage and adult. And it was not allowing mom and dad or grandpa and grandma, whoever it is, to stay together. And it was aging these 12, 13, 14-year-old boys out of the system. So when we looked at that, and pets. Pets is a huge one.
Right.
A lot of shelters don't allow pets.
Mm-hmm. And now we're talking about Arches Nest, which is actually the emergency shelter.
Correct.
When we were talking with Lynette, we were talking about more of a day center.
Correct.
Okay, go ahead about the Nest.
And so we really pride ourselves in the fact that we allow single dads. We actually have, I think, two or three single dads right now, one with a fairly small child, one with a teenage boy, 12, 13-year-old boy that both would have not been allowed in most family shelters. And then another one with somebody who is, again, sort of middle school aged. And so when we opened, the outpouring we received for allowing single dads especially in was incredible to me. And it seems like such a no-brainer why we wouldn't allow single parents who were male in the facility, and why we wouldn't allow boys in just because they had hit a certain age. So we really focused on that, and we really are so proud of that. And then again, the pets thing. Nobody wants to leave their pets behind, especially if you've got kids. Those pets become like their siblings, and they do not want to give them up. So we at Arch's Nest, we have a ton of dogs. We have so many dogs, and it's gets to be a little bit of a zoo in there, but everyone gets along really great, and they've really created a nice family unit.
Yeah, how many families can you serve at one time at Arch's Nest?
Well, that really depends on the size of the family. So we can serve up to 40 people at a time, and that really is a combination. We have 17 rooms. Okay. Some rooms, we have four rooms that we call sort of affectionately the nurseries, because they're very small rooms. So it's really a twin bed and like a bassinet. We have four of those that for like a single parent and a little. And then we have a large chunk of rooms that are two to three beds. But then we have what I think is really cool. We have some rooms that can accommodate up to four and five. And then those rooms actually have a Jack and Jill bathroom. So really it becomes one big family suite. So Lynette had talked the other day about having a family that they served that had 10 kids.
Wow.
There are no shelters that will accommodate that. Mm-hmm. And so we can bring them in. We can give them two large rooms with a Jack and Jill bathroom, and we can allow the whole family in. We have to have one parent in each room because the kids can't stay in the room by themselves. But we can put mom in one room with five kids, dad in a room with five kids, and they share a bathroom in the middle so that they can really sort of be a family unit in their own space. And there's nowhere else that does that.
Wow. I was going to say that just does seem to make common sense.
Yes.
All right. Well, thank you for that.
Yeah.
And do you feel like we're serving the need that's out there?
I mean,
how many of these Arch's Nests should we have in the Salem area?
We should have several more. We have a wait list. The only way we really take referrals is through Family First, our family day center. So they have to engage with Family First. Family First does the initial screening. And the reason for that is we really want to get them connected at the ground level of resources, just in case we can't bring them in very quickly, because we get full pretty fast. And then they connect to us and they can come in. But I would say if we had 40 more beds, we probably still would be full, right?
Yeah. And then even after that, when they're ready to move on, it seems like the affordable housing issue is something that we also need to address.
You know, I would say that no matter what subject we come in here to talk about, it kind of always goes back around to affordable housing as an issue, right? When you're looking at families, even if you take away the outlier of a family of 10 or 12, and you just talk about two parents, two kids, or two parents, three kids, and we're talking about a two-bedroom apartment or a three-bedroom apartment costing upwards of $2,000. How do you do that, right?
Yeah.
Because people don't realize how expensive it is to be homeless.
Mm-hmm.
You can't cook. You have to drive. You have to move your car. You have to eat ready-made food, which is very expensive and not very good for you.
Not very good for you, right.
And so, or they can't take, they go to hotels and they spend a lot of money on hotels because they're trying to, before Lynette opened Family First, I mean, there was nowhere for families to go shower, right? So if they wanted to get all their kids a shower once a week, they went and got a hotel, or they tried to crash on a friend's couch. But that also takes a lot of money. It takes a lot of money to be homeless, and it takes a lot of effort to be homeless. I think we talked about this in the last podcast. I think people have this impression that people who are homeless are just not trying hard enough. But the truth is, it's incredibly cumbersome and labor intensive and expensive to be homeless.
Well, thank you for that perspective. Well, I do want to move on to a kind of a more esoteric kind of a topic, because during our March conversation, we talked about generational homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
You just brought it up again. So talk to us about how supporting a family today can break that cycle, not just for the parents, but for the kids as well.
Well, I think it starts with the kids, right? When you're really talking about generational homelessness, generational poverty, generational trauma, most people didn't start here, right? Most people did not start from, I had a six-figure income and a perfectly happy life, and we had cars and we had houses and nothing bad ever happened to us, but somehow we ended up homeless. That's not how that works.
Mm-hmm.
Usually something bad happened to them. They didn't have an appropriate support system, which usually means they don't have appropriate family, right? How many of us, if we hit a snag tomorrow and lost our job, would have a family member that would take us in, right?
Mm-hmm.
I particularly am very blessed. I'll never be homeless. I have aunts, I have uncles, I have people that would take care of me if I hit hard times. Most of the people that we serve do not, because if they did, that's where they'd be.
Mm-hmm.
And so they come from families that are often not as stable as we would like. They learn that things are hard. They teach their kids, or their kids pick up that things are hard. And it just sort of continues. I worked with a family. It was really sort of sad to watch, and grandma had been injured and on welfare, and mom had been on welfare, and then daughter was on welfare, and there was a fourth generation, and she was about 10 or 11, and I said, well, what are you going to do when you grow up? And she said, I don't know, I guess stay home and have babies like my mom did. Like, it didn't even dawn on her that she could do something different, right?
Right. She didn't see anything different.
It was generations of this. And not to criticize the parent or grandma or anybody else, that's what they knew to be true, right? And so how do we interrupt it? We interrupt it there. We show that daughter that there's a different life, that she doesn't have to stay home and have babies when she grows up. Like, if she wants to go be a lawyer, she can go be a lawyer. She can stay home and have babies if she wants. She can do any of it, right? And so if we can get in and we can educate them, we can work closely with the school districts, we can work closely with Family First and the Nest and Family Building Blocks and DHS and all these other resources we can rally around and really show these kids especially that it can stop here and we can get them the mental health treatment that they need at that age and the resources they need at that age, then hopefully that doesn't continue into the next generation.
Mm-hmm. So you definitely see a path out of generational homelessness. And so as Family Homelessness Service continues to evolve, what gives each of you, I'm going to ask each of you this, what gives you hope about how we can better support families in our community?
Well, for me, I to kind of dovetail off the wonderful message that Sarah relayed in terms of generational trauma, I think it would be, and my hope is that the message continues to get out to families that there is support and resources like our resource center, that we build trust amongst these families so that it no longer becomes this quiet message when families are homeless, but it builds trust so that that begins to cease and it kind of breaks that barrier again of that generational trauma.
Mm-hmm. What gives you hope, Sarah?
I think what gives me the most hope is that I'm seeing this message of homelessness destigmatized.
Great.
I think some of the shame is lifting. I think the message is changing. I think the conversations are changing. It used to be several years ago, it was this idea that everybody who was homeless was on drugs and mentally ill and everybody was dangerous. And I think really post-COVID has really changed the way we see things because we're seeing a lot of first-time homeless. We're seeing a lot of multi-generation homeless, kids that are homeless for the first time. And I think it's really changing how we have to interact with them as a community, as agencies, how the agencies are coming together, because we don't have a choice but to break down silos and work together. And so I'm seeing a lot of that shame lifted and a lot of those conversations change. And I think that's ultimately, no matter what we're working on, that's how we change everything, right? We change the message. We change the way we're looking at it. We change the way we're doing it. And, right. I'm seeing a lot of that now.
Great. And it seems like both the Arches Family First and the Nest Family Shelter, they're both fairly new to the community.
Yes.
All right. Okay.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah. In the last few months.
All right. Then we will definitely want to have you back and find out how things are going.
We would love to be back.
Yeah. And is there anything that we haven't talked about, either Lynette or Sarah, that you'd want to say at this time?
Well, I would just say if there's any families out there that are listening or anybody who knows a family that needs help, please come in. We work really hard to make sure we're a welcoming community, and we are not here to judge. We're not here to tell you what to do. We're not here to call DHS and take your kids. We're here to really support you where you are. And so I would really encourage you to come in and give us a shot. Do you want to tell them the address limit?
Yeah, I was going to say come in where.
Yes. And so the Arches Family First Resource Center is located at 1255 Broadway Street, Northeast Salem, 97301, Suite 110.
Okay.
And again, we're open Monday through Sunday, 7 days a week, 8 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Great.
And you can always find it on our website, which is mwvcaa.org.
Great. Thank you. Thank you both. I've been talking with Sarah Webb and Lynette Snell about families who are homeless in the Salem area and what kind of services we have for them. Thank you both for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you
for having
us.
Thank you for having us.
Great.